It was spot on what I was seeing, so yeah, you're welcome.
Absolutely. Well, Derek, long time fan of yours, Aspinwall Mountain Gear. So thank you for being on the podcast today.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, Derek, I know a little bit of your story because I've read and done some research, wear y'all's gear. I'm a huge fan of what you're up to. So we're going to cover the gamut of your life and leadership.
All right.
So my interest is really around marriage, fitness, what God is up to when you're out of alignment, and what you're currently working on that's important to those that are listening. So let's get started with the first question. You and
Sure.
Lucy, what was the last date that you went on, and what does that say about your leadership?
Well, we have four kids, so we usually try to fit a date in once a week. The goal is once a week. It sometimes turns into we have to be real creative with how we get time together with how we have the kids from 6 years old to 13. But she had a work dinner benefit. She is a commercial lender at First Interstate Bank, and so she is somewhat expected to be at some of those events and dinners for Billings Clinic, and I was kind of the arm candy for the night. So I would say that was about 2 weeks ago that would have been an official date for us that we fit in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Having four kids is a difficult balance to figure out when it's going to happen. But it sounds like you're entering into the season, at least we are, because our 7 to 13, that now we have some built-in sitters that we can, like, all right, we're going to be gone for an hour or two, and drop back into the house. What would you say to men out
Right.
there, just in terms of, right, we always hear like this idea about date night and romancing and pursuing your wife, but why is it important to you? And is there something else that frankly may work different for your marriage instead of just the standard date night?
Yeah, Lucy and I are kind of, well, we kind of joke about this. She loves the outdoors, she loves camping. So, to most guys, like going out and shooting their bow is more of a date night for the guy, than it would be for the gal. And Lucy probably loves the outdoors, especially when it comes to camping, more than me. So I have had to learn the things that, over time, kind of studying my wife and understanding and learning what it is she likes and what it is she doesn't like. And then trying to find creative ways to fit that in when we can. And so, like this weekend, we were up, we did have the kids, all four kids, but we were up camping kind of under the Beartooth Pass in Montana. It's a beautiful kind of canyon area on Forest Service. And after a couple nights in a tent, I'm kind of ready to go. Lucy could do a week up there. And even though we had the kids, I could tell her battery was more full when we left and had a really, really good weekend with that. So that's a little bit unconventional. But there are, of course, the times where it's like, we haven't been to dinner or we haven't gone to a movie or whatever, or just taken a walk in a couple of weeks. And I've had to learn how important that is because, like, for a guy, I can go on autopilot for a while and I don't necessarily need the weekly date night that my wife does. So I think I don't until I really crash and burn, is kind of how I would say. And then my wife's been one for me. It's kind of like, as a guy, what do? We stuff it. We're like, well, that's this stress of life. It just keeps coming up. And so we stuff it. And my wife recognizes more accurately where that comes from. And it's like, well, if everything's chaos all the time, you can't, sometimes a date night is like, you can just finish an adult sentence that's longer than five words, and it's like somewhat enjoyable, right? You're not being interrupted. You're not having to clean up something. So I think it's become more of that. And I've gotten better in the last maybe 18 months to a couple years, as I feel like we're exiting this, you kind of said it is this chaos. You know, we have, like I said, four kids. My dad was sick there for a while. And it was like everything around us was just turbulent. It was a turbulent season. And so now I feel like it's calming down a little bit. And my wife just thinks, wow, I got my husband back in this big way. How did I ever do that? You know? And I think it was just because there was so much going on around me that was uncontrollable almost. Yeah. And now that that's kind of subsiding, I'm able to have like bandwidth and time to think about other things that need it.
You bring up a very interesting point about turbulent times, right? Because they're going to come in life. Mm-hmm. We're kind of leaving one of those seasons. Sure. Ourselves. Could you say more about possibly how you prepared yourself or made deposits into your marriage, into your family, into your life, and your leadership? Because, right, we don't know when the storms are going to come. They just happen. Mm-hmm. But something you did in advance of the turbulent time helped you prepare and just kind of get through that season, versus a lot of times the turbulent times comes in a man's life and it will sink a man, frankly, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're doing daily habits, rhythms, you know, pursuing those things that are important in life, you're able to sustain the hard seasons of life and get back to flourishing. So what would it be for you, mm-hmm, that allowed you to have that season?
Yeah, I think my testimony and my season for sure was probably extreme. Like I think I entered and not a lot of people know this. It's hard to share it through our brand and what do you say? Cause we're selling outdoor gear and apparel, but the truth of the matter was, behind the scenes, I was launched into probably Lucy and I got married in 2007. In 2009, when we were pregnant with our first child, I was working a horrible job in Bozeman. I was in a spiritual Egypt. Right. Like I was working at a brickyard. I mean, it was like the metaphor of the Israelites making brick. I was actually at the brickyard doing it, you know, in modern day terms. And I was, at the time, I was launched into this horrible kind of spiritual warfare battle, which I didn't know what it was at the time. I had no real understanding of what was going on. We were newly married. We were trying to make money, and that seemed like that wasn't working. And it was kind of really three large battles that happened over a period of time. And I think that the Lord kind of, with me, how he does it is I have a lot of dreams, and he kind of showed me in a few different dreams, kind of mapped out. He didn't give me the whole map. He just kind of gave me a compass of like, this was coming. Like, for instance, when my dad got diagnosed with ALS, I had no idea that was coming. That was like one of those things that wasn't disclosed to me in my Welcome to Christianity handbook, like life's tragedy, right? It wasn't something I saw coming, right? But that was in the middle of, you know, this period of time of trial where it was like I was being refined by fire. I was having to walk through and learn, you know, in the wilderness, what was going on. I was having to deal with the things, like I said, my dad getting sick, and then he eventually passed. I think what definitely it was the Lord that got us through it, because I shared kind of a lot more of our testimony with a pastor friend of mine in Bozeman. And he's kind of like, you know, Derek, if 100 couples came to me with what you've been through, 98 of them had been divorced. They wouldn't have made it. And so I was like, well, maybe through all of it, it was just this, I kind of became a prisoner of hope. I kind of became a person that was like, it's really bad right now. You know, we're starting the business. We're out of cash. We're doing the whole, you know, folding ourselves money and then flipping over and counting it twice. We're trying to make 2 + 2, 22. Okay. We're trying to, you know, we bought this home that was like the Jumanji home. out at the country club. Okay. And it was like the yard ate the house and it needed everything. And we had no money to put into it. We had three kids and you have kids, you know, it's like, this is a difficult season of time. So it was like the business was brand new. The kid thing was hard, the home thing. So it was coming at us from every angle. And then right when you thought you could get a little bit of air, it was like, boom, the next one hit you. And I just had to get to a place where it was like, number one, I'm not giving up. Like, as cliche as it sounds, my dad, like I said, diagnosed with ALS, he said to me one time, and it was kind of hard for him to talk toward the end of that diagnosis, but he said, you know, Hogan, was a nickname of mine. He said, you know, Hogan, the only way this doesn't work is if you give up. And it was kind of all of it. It was the store. It was the marriage. It was all of it. And I think there became a point where, like I said, I became a prisoner of hope in the sense that I believed that it wasn't always going to look like this. Right. Like I was in the foxhole essentially. Like I kind of get into war movies. It's kind of my thing, like Band of Brothers, whatever. Like I was in the foxhole. I was in, you know, they thought World War II when they first started was going to be done in a few months. And then it was like stretched out over this long period of time. And I had to come to accept that it's not always going to look like this, that there is going to come a point where you're going to be able to breathe. You know, someone's not going to be sick. You're not going to be dollar to dollar, paycheck to paycheck. It is going to look different. God's going to deliver you from that time. And I think that was the hope of it, knowing that it would change, was what kind of kept me going. And it sounds, like I said, super cliche. And it was like, you know, you can't focus on the game. Sometimes you just got to win the inning. And the inning was the next thing and the next day. Like it was one foot in front of the other. Probably a lot more information, but That's definitely a lot of what was going on behind the scenes. So when customers come in and they're like, oh, we haven't seen you come out with a new product yet. I'm like, I'm literally battle torn, you know, in life in general, you know, so I haven't had a chance to design the next thing yet. So.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's good. Super helpful. But it sounds like your previous seasons of what I would say suffering, ultimately, you know, you kept leveling mm-hmm. up and, you know, hopefully it's not 18 years of suffering, right? But it's this seasons of suffering, you know, 12 years ago that allowed you to be sustained in the current mm-hmm. season that you've just gone through. But that's a good word of not giving up, right? Prisoner of hope. Because really so many men have to have that sense of courage, like tomorrow will be better, right? But I just need to focus on mm-hmm. what's in front of me today. So what do you do, Derek, in your physical health, right? You're running a business, pursuing your wife, you got kids, mm-hmm. You mm-hmm. love the great outdoors there in Montana. What are you doing to take care of your physical health that God has entrusted to you?
So one thing in the last, like I said, I lost my dad probably, well, October of this last year, but leading up to that, his diagnosis was ALS, and there's not a lot that people know about that. And so one of the things that I kind of was convicted of is like, you know, I don't know, the food content that we are taking in is just, it's not good. And it's not, you know, as Americans, I'm saying, it's really not good. And so I think toward the beginning of this year, especially, one thing that I have very much noticed was real simple, practical things like limiting sugar intake in general. You know, it's a practice. I'm not a practical guy. Like I said, I'm kind of a dreamer. I'm an artist. I'm a creative. So I get a practical fix sometimes, even from the Lord. And it's kind of like, well, that's not this, is it? It's like, well, that is this, that very much so, you know, is part of it. And so limiting the sugar intake is a huge one for me. Trying to stay on some, I don't give myself a rigid diet, you know, like a vertical diet. I eat the same thing every day. It's not like that. I couldn't really focus on it that way. So sugar, and then get into the gym. At least I can't set a goal for 5-6 days a week in the gym like I used to when I played college sports. But if I said I'm going to be in the gym 3 days a week, I may only make it one or two, but that's better than none. And it seems like that little physical act kind of can set the tone for the day or the week. Yeah. So if I go work out, And usually I kind of like to lift. If I lift and I'm sore and I come down to the store and I have a horrible day and the thing just goes off the rails, I can get to the end of the day and be like, I still actually took ground today because I worked out, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You bring up important elements, right, with the passing of your father around ALS, this idea of sugar and how it is creating so many problems in our life. But right, we don't realize just the baby steps that we can take, as you said, to kind of take ground in our life, right? Like consider it a win if you got to the gym. Mm-hmm. Consider it a win if you said no to something that's super sugary that causes more inflammation, right? And celebrate the small steps. Sure. For sure. Mm-hmm. For you, Derek, what would you say? We kind of already dove into this area of challenges and sufferings in your life. But who have you become through those seasons? Like those seasons were there for various moments and opportunities. But who have you become through those challenges?
I think what has happened with me is the artistic side, the creative side's always been there, right? But the kind of daily discipline side has been something that as a creative, I don't think it's uncommon to not have, right? Like I'll just wake up when I want to, I'll float from one thing to the other thing. And I think for me, one thing I'm trying to take is just extreme ownership of what I can control. There are going to be things that I can't control, but what is it that I can control? Being the leader of, okay, so here's a dream. I'll just give this to you. This is really good. The Lord gave it to me probably about 3-4 months ago. And how we used to do it in the company was I was the creative. I was in charge of all the design of the products. And I actually taped a white line down the middle of the room. And my wife was a finance major from Creighton. So it just made sense that what would I do? I would be over here on my creative island, you know, and she would be over there in Excel spreadsheets and the twain shall never meet. Right. And, I pushed a lot of the burden of finances or lack thereof on her. Like, well, what's the problem? And people may agree, may disagree with this. And it was like, well, I think logically I was thinking I was doing the creative thing, which is what I'm good at. And then I kind of let Lucy handle the finances. But as the guy, or the husband, I don't necessarily think that was the right call. Okay. So 3-4 months ago, I have this dream and, we're riding in a plane, me, a few other people, the kids, and Lucy's flying it. All right. And she flies it and I'm kind of looking to her like, are we there yet? Right. And she decides to just land the plane randomly in the middle of a street in like Portland, Oregon, which I don't know why I would ever go to Portland, but that was, so the cars are like zipping around. And I look at my wife in the dream and I'm like, what the heck is going on? Why are we in the middle of the street? We're flying a plane here. We're nowhere near where we need to be. And she's like, I don't know what I'm doing in the dream. So I'm like, well, let me try. And so I then take over the reins. I start flying the plane and I'm like, it's not so bad. And I start heading over like I'm heading to the airport. Okay. Land the plane, the mechanic shop. I'm thinking that the entire plane's broke and needs to be fixed. And they're like, no, your plane's fine. You just need to get through that gate to the airport and you're fine. So obviously that meant a lot for me. And what that meant was, and I in a subtle way felt like the Lord said this, is, you know, you can put whatever letters behind your name that you want to, CEO, CFO, but the person that decides where the dollars go is the one that's in charge. And I think what God was asking me to do was I needed to fly the plane. I needed to be the husband. Even though I was the creative, I needed to learn it. I needed to immerse myself in it. And I needed to not push all of the burden financially, whether it was a high or low month, on my wife and then ask her to do it. And I think my wife's a very strong, intense personality, and I am too. But she, for a woman, is very strong, intense personality. And deep down, what she told me, she just like, I just really wanted you to lead. That's what I wanted. I was like, well, could have told me that 15 years ago, you know, but it's deep down. What she wanted was me to fly the plane. Right. And then since we've done that, we started paying off a pile of debt. I started to say, we're not doing that, kids. We're not taking that trip. We're making this sacrifice. We're trying to get the plane to where we know we want it to go, you know? And I think that has been a big lift. And people might think it's, I wasn't saying Lucy wasn't capable of flying it or doing it or that she's not brilliant. She's completely brilliant. But I think there was this disconnect for me financially where it was like, oh, all the problems are yours because you're the finance major. So that's on you. And then I'm going to be over here ordering a bunch of inventory that's only going to create more problems for you. Does that make sense? So it was really the dream was, I think, in it was personal finances and it was company finances of this, you're landing in the middle of the street right now. There's nothing wrong with your plane, but you got to fly it. Essentially was the crux of what I was gathering.
Yeah, that's good. Well, it has to do with taking a risk, right? All the things that you're describing, whether it's our marriage or finances, getting in the gym, as men, it's uncomfortable to step in those places that we don't really have certainty about, or we don't really know how it functions, because just like yourself, like, I'm like, I don't want anything to do with Excels. Like, I'll be fine spending the money, but like, finances are not my thing, right? So we limit ourselves and what God wants to do in and through us by saying, well, that's not my thing, that's somebody else's thing.
Right.
But all along, he's trying to grow us up by saying, hey, will you just take a risk and allow me to grow you
right
in this process? That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Where else are you finding taking risks as you kind of get back in the saddle, per se?
But one thing I had to come to grips with is when I became an entrepreneur, I was under the impression that I am taking this particular risk, okay? And I'll know within 3 to 6 months if it worked out or not. And really, that wasn't true. It was like when I decided to quit my job at Shields and go full-time with Aspenwall, I was going to live in a state of perpetual risk for a, maybe not perpetual, but for a period of time, I'm going to live in a holding pattern of risk of COVID, supply chain issues, employees. Do you get what I mean? So it became a way of life. And I think that it tried my faith. Then you get to a place where you start to see God produce and not in the immediate all of the time, maybe even rarely, but it was more of over a period of time of what it was that you survived, that you kind of then start to take a breath and conclude that exactly as we said earlier, it's not always going to look like this. And, you know, like the analogy of, you know, the armor of God, the full armor of God. And there's Christians that walk around and their armor's like beautiful and shiny and has nothing. And then a guy like me walks in and it's like dents all over it and it's rusty. And it's like, you start to get to the place where you're like, we're going to be okay. Like God has proven himself faithful. And so over and over and over again, and it's not been easy. He has definitely put me in scenarios where it was contrary to faith, right? Contrary to faith in hope. Abraham believed. And so it was very similar in that way that there was scenarios, whether it was the marriage or the business, that we were put into even seasons where it was like, this is not going to work. There's no way this is going to work. And, I think you start to just get, you know, you start to kind of get used to it. And then the more you start to win in the long run, the more you're like, I don't really know if there's a lot that the world, I mean, can throw at me or the enemy or whatever, just circumstances of life can throw at me that I'm not going to be able to overcome. Right. And I think that's when you get to that place, you start to become, you know, Psalms 1, you start to become a little bit immovable and you're tested and you're not as, you're becoming established. You're becoming rooted and established that, oh, I can maybe, even though it's not all, like every bill might not be paid or you're not completely out of debt or whatever, but it's going to be okay. And so the next series of risks for me would be, we started this brand. We kind of got distracted with many different products, Montana shirts, kid teddy bear onesies, dog treats. And it's like, I want to build an outdoor gear and apparel brand. So the next risk for us is, are we going to be able to shift gears and maybe not carry some of those things anymore and really focus in? And are we going to be able to grow sales online that we were historically used to in these other products, if that makes sense?
Yeah.
And I think that that's where it sits right now is yeah, I think we'll be just fine. I know we'll be just fine.
You've talked about dreams quite a bit, but specifically, that's good. Will you share about your Aspinwall story? Step out in faith. You know, the dream that God gave you to launch Aspinwall, and what that season was like for you to.
Right. So I, going all the way back to about 2006, I had this desire to start an outdoor brand. I was a young kid in Missoula. I think I was probably able to live on $1,200 or less a month. So my expenses were very low. And I allowed people, even Christian people, Christian leaders, to talk me out of doing what it is I felt like the Lord was leading me to do. And in fact, going as far as doubting that it was the Lord that was asking me to do it. And I think this is where the Lord had to let me go to bring me all the way back, was I was even under counsel that would doubt or suppress the idea that the Lord was even speaking to his people. Okay. So in 2006, I kind of closed the book on that and set it aside. And I don't think it ever fully went away. But then I'm married in 2007. I've got a wife to support and think about now. And right away in 2009, we're having our first child. And it would have been easier to just start the business when God kind of showed me, hey, I want you to start walking through some of these doors. Things that I didn't know. Like, I didn't know Photoshop and Illustrator. I didn't know the first thing about screen printing. I didn't know embroidery. I didn't know any sourcing contact. I knew nothing, essentially. I was a political science major that went through political detox. Okay. That's what I was. And over the course of time, this just kept coming up. It kept coming up. It was like I would set it aside and then it would keep coming up to start an outdoor gear and apparel brand. And so unofficially, it got to the point where I felt as though if I didn't make a move, if I didn't start something, I was like bordering on disobedience. It got to the point where it felt like I was burying the talent. Just to give you that analogy, it was like, I got to do something. I don't know what it is, but I got to take action. Okay. So I started in 2012, we started this company called Fig Tree Apparel. It had kind of like a social justice, complicated Middle East Bible aid. It was very confusing. I think it was to bring aid to the Jewish people in Israel, and even the Jewish people that we would reach out to bring them aid with the small percentage of sales, they were confused. They were like, this is not normal. This is, you know. And so we end up not getting the trademark for Fig Tree Apparel. So right there, we were kind of like, well, we're dead in the water. Like, what do we do? So Lucy and I are living in this really, really small home, like might have been upstairs and downstairs. It was like kitchen, living room, two bedroom, bathroom, very small. And I was like, felt like the Lord was leading me to do this. And now I'm up against the ropes because I can't go forward with this brand called Fig Tree. I think someone in Canada had something that was already in that category. So I was like praying to God. And this was exactly what I prayed was that night before bed. I was like, I want to see, I remember everybody said, this is like, Jesus can do nothing, only that what he sees the Father do, then he does it. So I'm like, I kind of need to know what the Father's doing. I need to see what the Father sees and do what the Father's doing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I went to bed that night very casually with that prayer saying, I need a name for this business because I can't really go forward with who we are and what we're going to do. I need a name. And I never, ever wanted to name the business after myself because I always thought, well, if the business fails, then I can just fold it up and pay off the little bit of debt and walk away and pretend like it never happened, right? I never wanted it to be about me or the potential fear of failure of being a public spectacle. And so that night I have a dream, and it was very vivid. I was kind of getting ready to open this store, and there was specific people in the community that were there. And I was kind of showing that I was about to open, and up on the shingle, because my wife and I always say, like, if you want to go into business, hang it on the shingle. Like, can you do it? And up on the shingle, just the only thing it said was Aspenwall. That was all it said. So it was like pretty obvious, you know, pretty obvious. You kind of got your answer. And even then, so from that point, we decided to file the paperwork for Aspenwall. I believed that, you know, God wouldn't give me the dream to name it Aspenwall and not get the trademark. We filed the trademark, got it. We opened the store. And even in the dream that I had months before, the people that were standing there in the dream were at the opening of the store. So it was like kind of became reality. And even just recently, this was within the last week or two, we landed Aspenwall.com. So it was always about the name. Now, I was super self-conscious, and still 10 years later, to a point, still am, not nearly as much, but self-conscious about, you know, this is my name. It's kind of, is it weird? It's weird, right? It's got to be weird. And I don't know, the Lord doesn't seem like he's afraid of it. You know, he just said to do it, so I did it. You know, he's not as concerned as I am. But that was kind of the origin of it. And I think it was also something more practical of, like, rather than have this wild social, you know, justice cause that brings aid to the Middle East, why don't you just do some, oops, sorry, I lost you there. Why don't you just do something more like, you know, about the mountains and about the outdoors and about Montana, something that you love? It's kind of like, well, that sounds like it's almost too simple, too easy. And then now when I tell people that the name of the company, Aspenwall, is actually our last name, they're like, wow, that's like the perfect name for a business like this. I'm like, yeah, I know, I know who named it, you know, like, you're right. So other thing I'll throw out, and this is just, you go back to like those things that have held you together. I think one thing as a believer that I've always, probably about that period of time where I was kind of redefining my Christian walk, I don't know if that's the best way to say it, but I was very much in the wrong counsel for a period of time where I was living, like I was trying to do all the right things. I was checking all the right boxes. I was like climbing Mount Sinai. I was checking all the letter of the law and everything, trying to not do bad, trying to do good, you know, memorizing the 7 habits of highly effective people. And then an 8th one pops up. And I think God then kind of showed me the difference between the works of the law and a life of faith. And so I began to really study Abraham. You know, here you have this guy. And I mean, it sounds silly, but he didn't have the Bible, right? Moses wrote the Old Testament, or the first 5 books of the Old Testament, and Abraham predated Moses. So this guy's going off of total, just his relationship with the Lord and what the Lord's telling him to do, which at times was wild, right? Like, sacrifice your only son. Go up and be circumcised. Like, that wasn't even, I mean, how, that's kind of crazy, right? So I began to start to walk, and I decided to take a different path, which was, I'm going to try to walk out a life of faith, right? In that, I felt as though God was honoring that, but it was difficult. It looked different. It wasn't as easy as, like, if I check off these 10 things in a day, then I'm good. It was like I was given a, like we talked about, a season or a period of bewilderment. I got handed the humble pie, you know, shovels full of it. And I didn't understand it, but all I could think is that this is contrary to hope. And when I studied people of the Bible, like Abraham especially, it was the same for him. It was the same in ways for him. Well, granted, it was thousands of years ago, but he was given scenarios. It was like, this doesn't even make sense. You know, you tell me I'm going to have a son. You tell me he's going to be the father of many nations. I have no son. Now you're telling me to sacrifice him. And in ways, I felt like that with the company. I felt like you asked me to start this business. Okay. Right. I've seen it on life support at least a dozen times or more. You get what I mean? But the Lord kind of kept assuring me that I will make thy name great. And I'm like, well, that kind of now makes some sense, you know? And so it's, I don't want to sit there and draw circles around the camps of Christianity, but it was like, that's that level of risk that we walk in now is, and it's very hard to do in an email blog to 7,000 people. It's like, kind of just needed to be, I think, talked through like this is like, this is what I committed to. So the risk is like, I'm following the Lord and I didn't get a roadmap. I got a compass.
So many people, you know, find themselves.
He told me to do this. I did this. And I don't know what the next thing is.
How have you learned to walk? So in your pursuit of faith and obedience, and you're really moving out of this umbrella of the law, right? Walk in obedience in light of faith, right? Because a lot of people hear obedience and they interpret that as law, right? Versus when you are in love with the Father and realize that this love is pursuing you, you desire obedience.
Yeah.
So maybe like in a very...
Mm-hmm.
practical way, how would you help somebody stay in alignment with obedience in a very practical matter?
Yeah. I mean, I wish I could say I was better at it than I am. I'm not. I'm the guy that's made 10,000 little mistakes and never the big one, right? And I think that, well, Paul talks about this, right? The law, that which came, you know, the law is good, holy, just, you know, pure. But it was sin that came in me, came in contact with the law.
You know,
I wouldn't have known covenants.
Our own traditions onto what Jesus has already come to do.
So it wasn't the law. It wasn't the standard. It was my sinful nature coming into contact with it, right? And Paul then goes on, oh, the wretched man that I am, you know, who will deliver me from this body of death, sort of a thing. And I think that what was very big for me was the grace message. The grace message was huge because I was failing miserably. I was putting off the things God was asking me to do for years. I was attempting to walk in all of these things. And I think obedience then, when I started to live the life of faith, it started to happen more naturally than I would have ever thought it would, if that makes sense. And I think the closer I draw, you know, you draw near, take a step toward the Lord, he takes a step toward you. Draw near to the Lord, and he will draw near to you. The more I see his hand in our life and in our business and our marriage and our kids, the more it allows me, the goodness of God, right, leads us to repentance, the more it allows me to take a step toward him. And then I find myself, even my kids will say it, you know, like I find like, Dad, you would have normally got really mad at that. You would have thrown something or you would have whatever. And it's like, well, I don't know. I can't explain it. I don't know how much credit I can take for it. I think that my job was like the more, like I said, the more I walk with the Lord, the more I started to see those things that did have me bound no longer did. And so freedom was something that for me happened over a period of time. And it happened definitely throughout that battle phase, that battle season. It happened in stages. And, I think that my one thing I would say that's practical, and I don't do it all the time, I should do it more than I do, is like sitting and hearing, right? Listening to a sermon, listening to, I grew up Catholic. I like worship, but my wife is like, she could tell you every single, you know, Chris Tomlin song ever written. I wasn't really ever like that. I was kind of more, you know, grew up liturgical church, but listening to a sermon, usually it's like that is kind of my way of receiving, and it kind of does let that, like I said, plus working out kind of sets the tone for the day if you can fit those in. So I don't really have some magic, you know, silver bullet that led to that. I think that it was more for me. Maybe it was like, you know, Jesus said, whom the Son sets free is free indeed. You start to walk in freedom, and now you're kind of like, well, then, you know, Paul got to the place where he's like, should we continue in sin that grace may abound? Certainly not. You get to that point where you're like, there's no way. There's no way I'm going to walk in you know, in any, I'm not going to walk in that. You go through 15 years of warfare and battle and no money and bickering with your spouse. And then you kind of start experiencing freedom. It's like the last thing on your mind is to go engage in something that's going to jeopardize that.
Yeah. It's so good. So rich. It is a journey, right? The whole faith and freedom and what God is doing in us, especially for the entrepreneurial world. Not that it doesn't exist in other people's lives, but there is this ongoing faith element when you put yourself on what you're working on right now.
Mm-hmm.
And an entrepreneurial seat, which tests you and refines you. This, what is going on mm-hmm. and why it's important to us.
Well, it sounds like we are shifting gears. We kind of started.
So maybe will you share with us?
By selling a bunch of variety of like Montana t-shirts, Montana themed t-shirts. But I knew, probably had a little insight from the beginning that was only going to be a hot thing for so long. And it wasn't something I wanted to do for 3 to 5 years and then move on to the next thing. I really wanted to grow. Really what I wanted to do was grow a direct-to-consumer ski hunt gear and apparel brand. That's what I wanted. And I think I, again, allowed people to say, well, there's no way you're going to go toe-to-toe with Patagonia, Sitka, Kuyu, whatever it may be. And I kind of would be like, well, maybe. Yeah, I don't have the resources they do. I don't have the marketing budget or, you know, inventory that they do. But I think that there's all sorts of ways that we can still take steps toward that. Like I look at it and I love the product development side. I have to kind of become more focused on who our customer is. Like if I declare I came out with the Easy Company camo. It took me like 3-4 years to design that. Well, I designed it to be functional in the field totally and be appropriate to wear out casually as well. So it didn't look like you rolled into the bar like you just gutted a moose, right? Every time. And so I knew that's where I wanted to go. Now, if I tell the entire world, I send out an email that says we're a bow hunting brand, you know, you're going to lose customers. They're not going to agree with it. They're not bow hunters themselves. And so I think that the steps that we're taking are in that direction. And it's going to be steps, not leaps, where we are designing and developing products that are for the mountain enthusiasts, ski, hunt, hike, that type of person. It's where we see, you know, it's interesting. We'll have the people that come in our storefront, they're buying a Montana onesie, like I said, or a dog bandana. But people on our website are buying the technical fleece. And so I'm noticing that big time, they're totally different. They're totally different what the customers are looking for. And people out of state, they don't want a Montana shirt. They want Aspinwall's next, you know, piece of gear that we have. So that would be a little bit of the transition. That's again back to that, you're believing in it. You're believing that you can do this. It's not about going toe to toe with people that have a $50.
Valid, man. I love y'all's hoodies.
You know, huge year in sales, and you're this.
And I noticed 3-4 person lot of Montana brand. Stuff. Just to but reiterate your point, I'm like,
I really like that. We
Montana
think
shirt.
We can develop products that are right in that category with them. The direct to consumer thing is something that we have largely not told people about. That you're not going to find it at stores. It's only from us, and it's probably going to be about 30% less than what you would find it in a store.
Right.
So being able to carry that message and share that with the customer has been a big focus of ours as of late.
Yeah. You bring up a shirt, but I don't know if I'd really wear it. Right. It echoes that pain to be niche enough, but also to serve a population that you desire to serve.
Right.
Point of what you're talking about, and how do you transition without, you know, making mm-hmm. mass moves that you lose everybody along the way. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's a great question. I would love any insight. I think that it just has to, one of Lucy's friends at the bank said, "I believe in steps, not leaps." And so for a dreamer, I see the finished product from a long way away, and I think to myself, "Why am I not there?" And now I'm more have to accept that yeah, we maybe we did land the plane in the middle of the street, and we just got to get to the airport and this is the first step in that is we're going to build this that fits right in what we're doing. We're going to kind of walk and chew gum at the same time. We talk about sales, and if my internet sales were at a point where I wouldn't probably close the store, I still need some place to go to work, but the storefront can at times be this continual distraction from what it is I know I need to do. So then you're kind of like, I'm not going to close the store. I kind of need the sales to pay for things that are happening there, but I also know that I need to focus and take steps in this other direction. So it's not easy. It's something that's probably going to happen over time, and it's going to happen in our messaging. It's going to happen in the products that we decide to develop. That's going to be what's going to carry it for us. Well, that would be so in the apparel industry over the course of the last 30, 50, 70 years, those jobs have gone to Asia. It's just reality. All the textile mills, dye houses, cut sew is all mostly done in Asia now. In fact, I think COVID. I didn't want to know the actual stats, but it some of the remaining handful that were here in America as far as like dye houses for fabric went from like I think like 10 to like 3. Okay. So one of those, if you said, Derek, what's your 3-5 year plan? I would love to bring cut sew into Billings and be able to order made in you like technical fabric, not just necessarily like a t-shirt or a hat. I'm talking a technical piece like a fleece and be able to make it right underneath my nose here in Billings and sell it direct. That would be the goal. And there are going to be products that labor-wise, we're not going to be probably be able to do an insulated jacket unless it's going to be $500, $600. You're just probably not going to be able to compete with that. But there are things that we can do that I would love. So one of the steps is we have a fleece. We called it the Ascent fleece, and then it kind of got in the COVID shuffle. We couldn't get it back in, couldn't get the material, couldn't get it cut sewn. And so we're renaming that Ascent fleece to the Essential, spelled Ascent Shill. And that is a made in USA fabric, four-way stretch fleece that is going to be cut sewn in the United States. So that's one of those steps that we're working on right now. Well, here in about a few weeks, you'll be able to go to aspinwall.com. We just have acquired that domain name. But if you type in Aspinwall with an I on Google, aspinwallmountainwear.com is our website right now, and working on getting that all forwarded to the new domain. But there should be plenty of gear on there. We're really focused on our brand and what it is that the Lord has showed me. That is the direction, that is the vision that you need to go. People out of state aren't going to, like you said, buy a Fifth Montana t-shirt. But there'll be some great stuff on there. So aspinwallmountainwear.com. We have free shipping 365 days a year. And I appreciate your inviting me on here. Oh, that's a good question. I want to become a guy that can pump gas and just stare off in the distance and not be as worrisome at every juncture. And I think that that's already headed that way. I used to say, I want this Gigantor brand, which wouldn't be all bad, but I think to myself too, I want to be the entrepreneur, be able to hire people that can help me in areas that distract me or frustrate me, and really develop this brand, be there for the wife, be there for the kids, and take care of myself. So I don't have Fortune 500 goals in that regard. I know internally what, you know, an abundance of peace looks like, a lack of anxiety. And so I would desire that in 3 years, it's more of that. Maybe I can get to a point with this place where we can, like I said, we can begin to hire really good salary positions that can help with things along the way, that it doesn't feel like it all falls on me. So that would be my goal. Well, yes. And thank you. And appreciate, like I said, you having me on here and being able to share all that. I probably have typed about 13 different emails that I'm thinking I'm going to send this out to all my customers. I'm like, I just don't know if this is the way the Lord wants me to share this. So I appreciate it. I know it was a lot of info, things I've been through. But yeah, I appreciate you letting me share. Well, yeah, again, thank you very much and best of luck with the podcast. If there's anything I can do to help you win, let me know. Yes, you as well. Thank you. Bye.